Well, folks, what's a crack? Welcome back to the podcast. Today's guest is an MEPS specialist estimator, and I wanted to get another person with a mechanical background on because the response and the comments have been brilliant from the rest of the mechanical or MEP guests that we've got on. So I decided to get someone on who's actually going to be speaking at Advancing MEP Estimating Conference in Dallas at the end of November. So it's actually running from November 29th to December 1st. So if you haven't heard about it, if you're interested in going, go and Google it. It's a great event. Again, it's run by Hanson Wade, who are behind the Advancing Pre-Construction Conference that I attended back in Phoenix in May. Our guest is none other than Jason Hollenstein. He is the MEPS Estimating Manager at StructureTone, so that's the STO group, and he's based out of New York. Now, he is going to be speaking at the conference, and the topic is automating takeoff to reduce human error and improve consistency across bids. Big topic, we get into it in great detail during this podcast, but I also got into his background coming through the mechanical subcontractor side with PG Mechanical specifically. And one project that we get into in detail is he actually led the design build assist. It was actually a design assist, if you like, back in 2014, which was kind of unique back then. It was the project was the New York Presbyterian Hospital. It was a new care center, and he was heavily involved in that very early on. So I wanted to get out how that journey went, lessons learned, and why it was so successful. As always, folks, enjoy. We're going to hear from Concentric and Beck Technology throughout this podcast.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled concentric.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Jason Hollenstein, what is the crack? Welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Morning, how you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on. I know you're working from home tonight. Congratulations on the new arrival.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a crazy couple months so far. Thank you.
Good. Is he sleeping through the night, or how are the feeds going?
Yeah, he's been good. It's last night I slept for 7 hours straight, so it's thankfully for my wife and I, the sleeping's going well.
Wow, that's an accomplishment in itself, getting them to sleep for 7 hours so early. Good. Yeah. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. You're coming on now. The reason I kind of asked you on is you're presenting in Dallas soon at the Advancing MEP Estimating Conference. And you're touching on a couple of subjects, but I want to bring you on for your MEPS expertise. We're going to get into that in more detail, but let's start at the beginning. When you were going through college, who guided you or referred you or mentored you into taking a mechanical engineering degree?
It's a couple of ways that I got there. Really, I went to a technical high school. So I'm originally from Staten Island, New York. So I went to a technical high school, and we were really engineering and math focused. It's kind of before STEM became a big buzzword. They were, you know, so a lot of the stuff that I got interested early on in engineering was from that experience, and kind of just a natural progression to go into an engineering kind of school and pursue that in college. So obviously there's a ton of engineering disciplines you could take, but mechanical kind of interested me the most just because of the wide breadth of different things you could do with a mechanical engineering degree. You can go aerospace, you could go industrial, but for me, I kind of had a liking into like thermodynamics and HVAC design. So really when I hit that level, kind of my third year of college, so it was just a natural progression there. I was good at it, liked it, and had a really good knack for it. So that's kind of why I specialized in HVAC for my mechanical engineering degree, and it served me well.
Brilliant. Yeah, listen, hindsight's wonderful. But back then, as you say, STEM wasn't really being pushed. The trades weren't being pushed. Mechanical, electrical wasn't being pushed. It was really, really fortunate, because you look at your career now, I mean, it's gone strength to strength. And we're going to talk through your career a little bit now, but it's pretty evident that you're a high performer when it comes to MEP. When you were in college, you could have went to aerospace. Why HVAC and why building services, or why get involved in the construction space? Was that a family influence, or?
No, not really. I kind of fell into it. I had worked an early job right out of college. Didn't kind of go well there. They kind of downsized in the middle of everything. It was right after the 2008 recession, so it was a lot of turmoil in the economy at that point. And one of the people there kind of said, you should go into mechanical estimating. Between my degree and my knowledge of estimating and engineering, it kind of was a natural fit. And I found a really good firm in New York, and it seemed like a really good opportunity at the time. And I was there for 9 years after that. Right. So, worked on a lot of high profile jobs and got really good at it, and, learned a lot from it too.
Absolutely. I mean, we can go into that now. It was PGA Mechanical, and you were there for 8 years. That first kind of 6 months of going in, I mean, you obviously had a passion for maths, loved HVAC, loved mechanical, hadn't got a kind of much exposure to estimating. How was that first 6 months, 12 months, and getting exposure to estimating? I mean, how difficult was it? Was it as you expected?
But no, my big thing was like, okay, I know how to design the system. I know how to, what it looks like on paper, how the engineers kind of design it, and what parameters you use to figure out all, you know, the cooling you need and heating you need, and everything that goes, all the equipment you need to do it. But like, how do you price it? That was the big thing. Like, what metrics do you use to take that design on paper and figure out what quantities you need to take off, how to do the takeoff in the first place? So that was a little bit of a learning curve there. But thankfully they use a lot of what's called SMACNA, the Sheet Metal Association Contractors of North America, has guides on how to do everything, get it. And I was mentored by two people originally at the PJ, and they really took me under their wing and exposed me to a lot of things. I think they exposed me to a lot of challenging things at first, just to see what I could do and go from there, right? So it exposed me to a lot of high-level things in the beginning, and I picked it up really quickly, and you know, it was just a natural progression, right, from designing to pricing it. You kind of know what you're looking at. And the first 6 months, it wasn't much of a learning curve on how to, you know, do those takeoffs, but how to bid properly and do it the right way and how it's done in the industry. That kind of is a big learning curve, and the strategy you kind of need to do that, and how to manage your workload and how to accomplish the task. That's the big learning.
Brilliant, because obviously it went well at PGA, and you've obviously picked it up really quickly. Then you went on to lead the first design build estimate project for the company up in New York. It was the Presbyterian Hospital. It was a new ambulatory care center. Talk us about that. What year did you do that? And how complex a project was it? What were the challenges?
Let me think. That was probably like 2013 to 2015, kind of was that whole process. We were bored early on board with, Turner Construction Company, right? One of the big general contracting firms in the country. We were brought in very early to assist, design assist, right? Name kind of explained itself, to, as a contractor, kind of work hand in hand with the engineer, the architect, the owner, and the hospital itself to like deliver a product that really eliminates a lot of the challenges you find on a job of this size in the field. So what we're brought in to do is do a lot of co-engineering with the engineer of record, which is Siska Hennessy, and kind of give our input onto like, okay, you guys are designing it and doing all that work. We're going to make it practical for you. So that's, and then also to pricing it, when I come in, we kind of gave them pricing like every 2 months as the job progressed through the different design phases of like, you know, design documents, construction documents, and final construction for permit. We gave them conceptual estimates from the beginning based on like two mechanical drawings in total. It's like, here's our concept of what we want to do. And we kind of gave them a, you know, tens of million dollar estimate based on that, based on our expertise and knowledge of different jobs we've done in the past, and kind of just extrapolated from there and gave them a full blown out, here's the 9 floors of the hospital, right? This is what it's going to look like. These are your quantities, these are your costs. Here's the things we see. And that was done regularly with the design team. And it worked out really well because the hospital appreciated our input. The owner and the owner's rep too really appreciated our input because it kept them in line with the design budget weekly, right? So there was never any question of why is it coming in so high over budget, or why is it, you know, creeping up to that point? Because as they added things into design, they knew what those things cost right away.
Brilliant. An unbelievable project to be involved in. Was it one of your first that you led?
Yeah, it was. At that time, I was kind of moving up to be senior estimator. And a job like this kind of requires a lot of patience and diligence, just because like the requests that you're going to get from the owner about pricing or how you figured out something or what assumptions you made just requires a lot of patience and diligence. And that's kind of what they were, making sure that I had on to move up to that level at that point. Because I think at that point, 2013, I was only in it for 4 years, roughly, I want to say, right? So pretty early on in my career. And it was a good litmus test of my progression at that point.
I can imagine that, being handed that sort of design assist project from Turner. How important was it, the fact that it was a design assist and you got involved early? Talk to me about the benefits of that.
It's weird because like in New York City, that doesn't happen very often, right? New York, it's a different market there, and a lot of design assist happens throughout the country, but for some reason in the Northeast, it doesn't happen very often. I would say it was a good fit at the time for us, and we just really kind of sold them on our services at that point, right? Because we self-performed a lot of the work. And it was a very difficult job on York Avenue. It's a very congested area over there. And they had to demolish an existing hospital to do this job. So it's just a lot of moving parts and pieces. And that's why it's such a high profile job for us, right? Because it would showcase like, this is what we can deliver to you as a client. It does cost more up front, but on the back end, you save so much time and effort in the field that a lot of these things eliminate, you know, in the conceptual stage. So that was kind of the pitch for this whole project.
Brilliant. So what you said there about the expenditure at the front obviously saves you money at the end. You're talking about pre-construction services there. So for your value engineer, and you're asking for a fee up front on whether it be an early fee or whatever, a consultative fee. I mean, right. It's talked about throughout the industry, and I'm sure when you go to Dallas, they'll be talking about that a lot as well, because design assist is becoming more popular. So back in what was it, 2013, 2014, that was early to get paid on pre-construction services from a mechanical firm.
Um, Say that one time. You broke. I'm sorry. You broke up real quick.
Yeah, just getting paid for pre-construction services. It's kind of unheard of on the mechanical side, especially yes. back in 2014.
Oh yeah, I mean it's still unheard of now. I mean, as a contractor to get that, most of the time it's at the general contractor level, and they have that's kind of where I fit in now. Is they have their own staff to do all this budgeting and whatnot, but this subcontract at the subcontractor at that time it was. I mean, unheard of to do it. Now it's more commonplace where if you get trying to get the pre-construction contract, they'll bring on a really good, strong subcontractor, mechanical usually, with the presentation for the general contract, they'll bring them along, right? So that's a little bit more commonplace. But back then, this was just, it was really a novel concept and something that wasn't done before. And it's really not done much now either.
Yeah, and, but it's so strange, Jason, as you say, from your experience of that project, it went so well. It's crazy that contractors don't do it more often.
Yeah, it's I saw the benefits in it, and I still speak to some people there that I'm still friendly with, obviously, and they pitch it all the time, and most, you know, it's not really taken much anymore. I think just the competitiveness of the industry now kind of has changed that, because at that point, right, if you're getting that pre-construction, but you're kind of hoping you're eliminating the whole bid process, right? And in turn, it's not like name your price, but it's basically like you kind of have the in to get the construction piece, right? That the big part of the contract. And I think owners are hesitant to lose that portion of, you know, driving numbers. That's, you know, a piece that has to be considered, I think, too.
Yeah, well, listen, we're going to go into now the fact that you're in the general contractor side now with Structure Tone. But if you mm-hmm. go back and you think about it, obviously Structure Tone will be pushing the client to offer pre-construction services. So it'd be quite hypocritical of a general contractor to not offer the same thing and pay a subcontractor for, as you say, those specialty trades that are so important that if you get the design right and the information, the costings right at the beginning or even the procurement, it can save you so much money on the other side.
Yes, absolutely. And it just kind of makes things transparent with the owner, right? I mean, they're looking for us for our expertise and guidance throughout the project and looking at ways to get creative to save money. So like that's kind of where we come in hand and go to bid where, you know, the plan is kind of intact and established, and that's how we bid the job with the subcontractors we do go out to.
Brilliant, love it. Yeah, it's a future. Design assist becoming more popular. Design build, it's definitely the way forward. And then obviously making the move to the Structure Tone, going from a subcontractor mechanicals contractor into Structure Tone to become MEPS estimating manager now. Tell me about that transition. How did it come about, and how is the role now? How did you again? Was there a learning curve going in there at the beginning? What sort of responsibilities do you have?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a learning curve going from the subcontracting world to the general contracting world. They're not the same. They share a lot of similarities, but the way that the work is done is different. It came about. Just as an opportunity that somebody was leaving and they knew about me from our working relationships over the years, right? When I was at Pinsky, and, you know, they had the person that I have their position now, they left and, you know, they kind of called me up and it was a good fit. I mean, I've known their organization for so long, you know, bidding jobs at PJ and Pinsky for so many years. So we kind of had that relationship, and, there is a learning curve, because at least and also too, like I was managing some of the Binsky's Pennsylvania estimating team, but in the GC world, it's different. Like the skills that kind of I was doing in the mechanical side is what I needed, but the skills that I needed at Structure Tone are a little bit different. Managing is a little bit different in the GC side, because you're kind of managing a team to deliver your goal. I'm a little bit of a working manager sometimes, but most of the time I'm kind of leading a team to say, okay, this is the work we have. Here's the assignments. here's, you know, the deliverables and this is what we're going to do. You guys are going to, you know, do this task. I'm going to do this other task in the background, kind of to help out the whole process and wrap it up at the end. So that's kind of the different strategy in the GC world. And just estimating too in the GC world is a lot different too, because you're doing a lot more parametric estimating. So you're not doing like actual takeoff. Like you're not really getting drawings or documents that give you like a fully designed plan. So you're kind of doing conceptual estimating in your head and designing the system as you go along. So that's another piece of the puzzle that is different in the GC world. You're getting things so early that nothing's really designed. It's up to you to kind of figure out something of how it could look like in a conceptual way. And that's a big challenge as well, because if you really don't, you need the experience to like just see what engineers do in certain situations and with certain plans and certain designs. And then you need to be able to like, you know, apply that over a square footage or apply that to a certain room or apply that to a certain system, right? That's kind of what we do at Structure Tone when we get these pre-construction contracts. Is just, it's very early, but you need to know, like you need certain things and certain systems, and it's just very conceptual. So that's a big learning curve too. But it can all be mentored and like you can learn it as you go, right? It's not, it takes a while, but it's not an impossible task.
Brilliant. Yeah. No, and listen, you know yourself, you've got an incredible background on the subcontractor side. That would only be invaluable. And then you've got your design experience as well. The whole collaboration you talk about quite a lot. What about technology, Jason? We're going to get into it now when we're talking about automating the takeoff part of it, and then that's just to reduce human errors and improve consistency. It's a topic that you're going to discuss down in Dallas. How do you go about that now on your job with Structure Tone?
Well, what I like to do, and from my past too, like a lot of the takeoff software that we used to use, like Trimble and whatnot, right? That kind of suite of software, they have built-in assembly that you can use. So like whatever pieces of equipment you have, you can, if you have multiple hookups for something, you can create an automated assembly, and you're just popping in, you know, size parameters. That's it. Everything else will be accounted for you, whether it's, you know, piping, valves, fittings, etc. And on like the hot water side, for instance, right? That's kind of the automation that you have in these pieces of software. So that kind of, you know, is the automation that we use on a subcontractor, but on the general contracting side, it kind of helps out too, because I know, okay, that hookup cost me, you know, $700, right? For instance, right? In the market, I just can plug that right into our parametric estimate that we do, you know, for these pre-construction jobs. So that's kind of the automation that we're doing. It's difficult to do something automated in this world, just because of how like technical and hands-on you have to be when you're doing these takeoffs and getting all your quantities and whatnot. A computer kind of can't distinguish what belongs where, I think, just yet. I mean, you could obviously do square footages and linear footages, but you really still need to be hands-on and diving into what is kind of automated still to reduce the errors that a computer is going to give you.
Yeah, the bots aren't going to replace us just yet, Jason. We need your brains and your magic. It's funny because I think you guys are implementing Destiny at the moment, the Backtech technology.
No, it's been talked about, but I know it's out there.
Cool, yeah. Because technology, I mean, to me, technology, you've got Toggle AI, which is the automation technology. We've got Work Order, which is another one. Do you guys still do takeoffs manually, or are you guys using historical data? How you work on it?
Combination of everything, right? So like, we're using still just on-screen takeoff, right? That's the basic, where it's just you're doing square footages and linear footages and area zones, whatever. That's kind of what we use on a day in and daily basis at Structure Tone. Printing out drawings, we really don't do anymore. It's all through like Bluebeam, right? So we're marking up stuff on a PDF using that suite of software that has all the tools built in to do the takeoffs. And that I kind of like, because it could really, like, you could really like give your client a pictogram of what their job looks like, right? So you can, everything that you take off, you can just pop right in on the drawing itself, and you just kind of give it to them and say, here's your job, right? That's kind of the beauty of that. But in the subcontractor world, like, we're using stuff that gives us a lot more granular information, right? So we'll know everything, like, to the fitting, to the elbow, to the hanger, right, of exactly what is in this job. So that's kind of the level of detail you'll get into with, you know, at the subcontractor level, right? So that's kind of the difference there between the two worlds as well.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, it's definitely true words, but it sounds like you're adapting well to the to the contractor GC side of things. And what about the MEPS? Yeah. Obviously, your background's in mechanical. Electrical wise, how do you manage that? And do you have an electrical specialist that kind of reports into you?
Yeah, my electrical estimator, he's really, really, really strong guy. He comes from the sub world like I did too. Younger guy, but like, he's very much like me, how I was coming up, and you know, how I feel about myself doing mechanical plumbing and sprinkler work. He's just as good in the electric with the electrical, right? But I also am, you know, kind of learned it as well on my own how to do it. I'm not at the level he is with that, but you know, he asked me to do a little office space with just convenience, power, and lighting, can do it. So just the nature of my job and kind of my own, like, I guess my own integrity of like kind of knowing a lot about everything. And it's just kind of, as a manager, I feel like I should know it too, right? Just because when you're in front of clients, like, they're looking at you to answer these questions, and you should have an answer as a manager.
Yeah, there's nothing worse, Jason, than getting a question thrown at you that you don't know the answer to, is there?
Nah. No, and I'll have to get back to you.
Very good. Cool. Well, listen, when you were going through your career, Jason, obviously there's major highlights. What was the biggest kind of I don't want to say bad experience, but is there anything that you could give people, maybe a mechanical engineer that's coming up through the ranks in a subcontractor, in a GC? Is there any pitfalls that you can give them advice on to say, listen, if this happens or it happened to me, this is how you stay clear of it? But basically, any advice you would give a newbie coming into the world?
I mean, as through my career, I just kind of like just get as much exposure as you can. Pick everybody's brain that you're coming into, right? I find that there's certain things that I know specifically, like in MEPs, that's not talked about a lot of the process stuff that's done for like industrial and pharmaceutical projects, right? That stuff, like, it's very technical and niche, and not a lot of people know it. It's like that. I kind of went out of my way to get to know it from a couple of people that were retiring, and I shadowed them for like a whole year and just learned it, right? So at Binsky, I was one of the few guys that knew it, and when they were gone, I was the only person that knew it and how to do it properly. So that's kind of my biggest advice. Like, you got to find a mentor, and you got to find someone that's going to teach you a lot of these technical things and teach you how to do it properly. But also too, like, I had another mentor, not just on the technical side, but just on the client relation side too, right? So find somebody that is going to like teach you how to interact with people in your industry, right? That's really important as well, because I mean, half the job really is just giving the person that you're trying to do business with the confidence that you have their best interests in mind. We win a lot of projects at Structured Tone from our client relations and the fact that we're doing everything in our power to help them achieve their goals, not only just, you know, as the finished product, but financially as well too, right? So that you kind of have to make it a priority when you're coming up and develop those relationships.
Big time. But develop those relationships and learn how to storytell, because you gotta tell stories about the numbers and about how the project's going to go together. And quickly now, yeah, before we let you go, Jason, is give us some insight into the market right now. I mean, we're all talking about price escalation. How is all the products on the mechanical side and the electrical side? How are the prices coming along?
The pricing, it's just incremental bumps lately. I mean, the big bump was like in mid 2021 all the way till early 2022, like you would see 7, 8, 12% increases on a lot of raw materials and equipment. It's cooled down lately, but what really keeps driving us crazy is lead times. And some of the small, most mechanical equipment, maybe 40, 45 weeks, but a lot of the bigger electric equipment, 60, 70, 80 weeks, depending upon the size. And that's like transformers and switchgear. So it's just really difficult to do a lot of construction now because of these crazy lead times. And like the job might only be 40 weeks, but you're not going to get the piece of electrical equipment for another 20 weeks after you're off the job. Right. So that's the difficulty of kind of forecasting your project and doing all the scheduling is navigating this market that just doesn't want to seem to correct itself and just keeps at every time you think it's going to improve, you just keep getting bad news. And even then too, like we still get pieces of equipment where, you know, we're saying, hey, it's going to be 40 weeks. And then all of a sudden, like 2 weeks before it's ready to ship or, you know, go on the product line, it's like, no, that'll be another 8 weeks or something like that. And we're kind of at the mercy of the manufacturer and we don't have power to change that. But I don't see that, you know, the power that the manufacturers have, I don't see that changing. They kind of just are giving carte blanche. It's strange.
It's very difficult. I mean, for that not to change. And how do you, what happens there, right? So a client comes to you and says, listen, Jason, I need this project done in 50 weeks, right? But you know that 70 weeks out, you're going to have your switchgear there. Do you complete the project and just leave it sitting there so that it's a plug and play once the switchgear arrives? Or does the client say, you know what, I'm not even going to start the project, order the switchgear now, but start the project in 20 weeks' time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We try to get those packages as early as possible. It's either or. Sometimes the engineer and the client will just give it, you know, if it's a CM job where we do have it and we're going to be building the job, they give that to us as early as possible. If it's for bid and we're competing against others, we have to find out all those lead times and build it into our schedule and kind of just on our proposals qualify, you know, why we're including extra time to do the switchgear changeover because of, you know, how long out that piece of equipment is, right? So that's the balance we have right now in the market. And I don't see it changing at all. I mean, we have a couple of strong electrical subs in our area and they do this all the time and it just keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah, so it's going to go into 2024. I mean, 2023 was a good year for construction, plenty happening, but I see 2024 really taking off again. Interest rates are going to come down, and these lead times are going to be
a little quiet right now. 2022 was pretty good, I think, because a lot of the jobs that were delayed from COVID were moving forward, and then now with the, you know, the market the way it is with the interest rates and whatever, it's just a lot of the jobs are being pushed out or not starting just because the financing for these jobs is just, you know, it's unheard of, right? So it doesn't make sense financially for some of these guys to take on these loans that they need for their construction at the rates, and they kind of just are like biding their time until it comes down, if it does.
Yeah, it's tough. It's going to be a complex year this year, I think. Well, sorry, the end of this year and then into 2024, but I hope it just settles down and everyone can kind of get a proper orderly structure in place to run these projects and get the lead times into reasonable, like within reach, basically.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, big time. All right, Jason. Well, listen, this has been an absolute pleasure. Looking forward to seeing you present in Dallas. I want to thank you for your time. If there is anyone that maybe has a follow-up question or wants to get in contact with you, where's the best place to get you?
My email is my best place to get me. It's jason.hollenstein@structuretone.com. And I'm available all the time anyway. So I enjoy talking about the industry and speaking with others. It's fun to talk shop.
That's it. It's all about collaboration, isn't it? And listen, people will reach out to you. I'll put your email address in the show notes down below as well. So listen, Jason, thank you very much.
All right, Garrett. Take care. Have a good one.
Stuck in spreadsheets? Tired of the endless loop of copying and pasting? Now imagine all your estimating workflows in one program. Beck Technology's innovative Destiny Estimator software streamlines the entire estimating process. With intuitive tools and powerful analytics, you can create accurate and reliable estimates quickly and easily. We understand the challenges pre-con teams face because we were born from construction. When you are ready to streamline your estimating efforts, visit us at beg-technology.com and talk with a tech expert in a Destiny Estimator demo today.
A huge thank you to Jason for coming on and sharing his secrets, success stories, and failures. As always, folks, you heard it there on the podcast. Jason is more than happy to take in any follow-up questions you may have. I have detailed his email address in the show notes. Again, a big thank you from me and the Pre-Construction Podcast team here. Keep listening, keep subscribing, and keep sharing these wonderful stories.